This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. All it takes is one basic Google search to reveal a person's past mistakes and embarrassing digital history. The European Union, famously in the past year, has made that information a bit harder to find.
Europe's High Court ruled that privacy laws give people the right to ask search engines to remove links to inadequate, old, or excessive information.
They have something called, you ready for this, Shep? The right to be forgotten.
Yes, the right to be forgotten. First proposed by... Oh, what's his name?
His name is Mario Castella Gonzalez, a Spaniard who discovered that an old newspaper article about the tax seizure of one of his properties was high among the Google search results for his name 10 years later. His complaint to Google led to the European Court of Justice's decision asserting the, quote, right to be forgotten. Now the debate has crossed the ocean. John Simpson, director of Consumer Watchdog's Privacy Project, is making the case for an American right to be forgotten.
We have filed a complaint with the FTC alleging that Google's failure to offer such requests to be considered here in the United States while doing it in Europe and holding themselves out to be a privacy-friendly company is unfair and deceptive.
Deceptive how?
Well, if you essentially say that you really care about users' privacy and you do it repeatedly and publicly, and then you act a different way by not offering a key privacy tool which you can, in fact, offer and are offering elsewhere, we think that's deceptive.
I have to question the premise, which is how having the unpleasant experience of seeing something from your past dredged up in a Google result, sometimes very high on the page, how that constitutes a violation of privacy. The Google index is only from stuff that is, by definition, already public.
There's a concept known as privacy by obscurity, which in fact existed in the pre-digital age. I mean, things that happened a while back slipped from everyone's collective consciousness. The problem now is that, you know, everything's just a click or two away or tap away on your mobile app. And we think that the right to be forgotten, as it's being called, or this right to relevancy, would catch up privacy protection in the digital age.
Well, there's one thing that Europe doesn't have that we do have, and that's a First Amendment. And in this country, there is an extremely high bar for suppressing speech.
That decision in Europe was actually a very strong pro-free press decision, because Gonzalez asked to have the article removed from La Vanguardia, who published it. And the court said, no, that would be censorship. We can't do that. The notion that this is somehow censorship, it isn't, because the original items are still there. That way, it's just the instantaneous return that's linked to the name that you're allowed to request the removal of.
Isn't getting the government involved creating a kind of slippery slope that could lead to more and more obligation by search engines to remove more and more stuff?
Sometimes, and this may be a case, there are balancing things that you have to do. I mean, on the one hand, there is a right to privacy, and then there's also the public's right to know. California now has got a provision that if you post something as a minor, that you can request to have it taken down. If you look at the Fair Credit Reporting Act, after 7 years, you don't have bankruptcies in your credit report anymore. The idea that things need to be relevant to the current situation does have grounding in American practice.
Here's another slippery slope question. Now European officials are saying, we not only want Mr. Gonzalez's financial problems unmentioned on searches in Spain, we want them unmentioned on Google everywhere in the world. Is that the kind of information world we want to live in?
Well, look, to be meaningfully offered, it has to be on all of the domains. And I draw the analogy to what Google does when it is confronted with a posting that violates copyright. Google will take that down on a worldwide basis.
But do I want to outsource the cataloging of all published anything to a private company?
The record that Google itself has established shows that these decisions can be made in a responsible way. There was someone who, for instance, I believe the article was about her husband being murdered 20 years ago or something like that. She asked for that to be taken down, and they agreed to do that. The link from her name, not from his. There was another case where someone was a financial advisor, and he had been caught embezzling. He asked to have those taken down, and they said, well, no, you're still in the financial advisory business, and you were embezzling a few years back. That's very relevant. It's only about 41, 42% of the requests are being taken down.
I want to end where we began, John, and ask a question about Mario Costeja Gonzalez, who did succeed not only to get his tax repossession expunged from Google Spain, but got to change the law for all of Europe. But as a consequence, now millions and millions and millions and millions of people know all about his financial problems from 1998. Does he get to go back now and ask Google to remove links to all of the thousands and thousands of stories that have detailed his problems chapter and verse?
Well, he certainly can ask, but it would seem to me quite likely that the request should correctly be turned down. You know, prime situation of somebody doing something that results in groundbreaking legal decision, but has some other consequences that he did not expect.
Well, John, thank you so much.
I've enjoyed talking with you.
John Simpson is the director of Consumer Watchdog's Privacy Project.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.